Hello, hello, hello. I am your Carmen Sandiego, hostess with the mostest, Michael Munoz. And welcome to In Yo Mouth.
In Yo Mouth.
I'm the queen of food who's always in the mood.
To lick it right, lick it good, show you how to
hug. Oh, God, that's good.
I want to know what you eat from the streets to the sheets.
So open wide, honey.
I'm coming.
In Yo Mouth.
Got the goosebumps.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey there and welcome back, folks. So once again, I'm your hostess with the mostest, Munoz, and it is Pride Week here in New York City. We are family. Oh, oh, oh. Oh my God, what a crazy Pride Month it's been. Folks, do you know I just got in the mail? Someone sent me, shout out to you, Relish Catering, which I'll talk about in just a second, but they sent me an entire like DIY mini rainbow cake just like delivered to my door because they love me, I guess, and they just wanted to. But I opened the box and it's legit just like a baked cake in layers with the icing, and it's probably one of the most fabulous and most random things I have ever received. I am very honored that they chose me to send something to. But it was really cute and really cool, and what a weird but yet fabulous thing just to like randomly like wake up to in the mail, right? If you are new around here and you just maybe, Apple Podcasts has just listed me for the month on their Pride playlist under Passionate Spirits. I am so honored to be listed amongst other amazing LGBTQ podcasters. I am the only food podcast out there celebrating LGBTQ people in the food space. So welcome. You are welcome into my podcast home. And if you are not new around here, well, you know how it goes. The tomfoolery is at full speed. What else can I tell you? Oh my God. A big thing's happening. I just decided that I missed the restaurant industry. I mean, who misses the restaurant industry? But I took on a little bit of a part-time job in the evenings working at an outside boat restaurant thing here in the city. Let me tell you, it's actually a really good time, and the toxic masculinity in the kitchen is alive and well. And being passed down through the ages, it's almost like nothing has changed, but yet everything has changed. But let's get to the getting on today, because I am super, super, super excited for today's guests, y'all. The gay celebrities keep going, or should I say the celesbianism is like just alive and well. In Your Mouth listeners, new and old, please help me welcome the ones, the onlys, Claire Rouget and Rosemary Kimani of Authentic Food Quest. Hi, ladies.
Hi there.
How are you?
Excellent, great.
Oh my goodness. Well, first and foremost, thank you for giving me your time, because you're not even in the United States. Tell the kids where you're from, where you're like podcasting from with me today.
We are in Kotor, Montenegro.
Oh, I mean, can in your mouth get any more fabulous? We are reporting to you live from Montenegro. Yes. I feel like I should have worn something different.
You're just fabulous as is.
Oh my goodness. Well, thank you for being here. And before we get anywhere, y'all, I need to do what we always do here, ladies, on In Your Mouth. In the grand tradition of In Your Mouth, I need to wish you Happy National Pecan Sandy Day.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Pecan Sandies. Have you had a pecan Sandy? Do we know what a pecan Sandy is? It's very American, I think. Pecan Sandies.
No. But we have been on a pecan trail.
Oh, okay. Yes. So we'll get there. From pecan Sandy, we're going to take the pecan trail to the pecan Sandy. Okay. Now, wait a minute. What exactly is a pecan trail?
South Carolina, the city of Florence, is known for pecans. And they have an amazing pecan trail where you visit restaurants, you visit producers, and you visit stores. And they have pecan-flavored martinis, to cakes, to desserts, to beer. I mean, it is a fabulous thing to do in Florence, South Carolina.
Oh, my goodness. You must have had a pecan sandy while you were in Florence, South Carolina then. Because a pecan sandy is basically a shortbread cookie. It's that has like roasted pecans in it. And it also, they sometimes can be referred to as a sable.
Hmm.
Right? And they're like these delicious, but yet a little dry, like cookie, like a biscuit, right?
Yeah.
Delicious. And I don't know, I say this to a lot of my guests, why we feel the need to celebrate all these random foods and have random food holidays. Do you have an idea? Do you have any, like, maybe thoughts on why we need a national food holiday for everything?
I think it's actually great. Peru, as an example, has a national Pisco Day. Argentina just celebrated Malbec Day.
Come at me. We're here. We are rolling. They are ready for me in your mouth. They're like, we are ready for this, and we are going to be completely on brand at the same time. Yes.
Exactly. I think it's good for their tourism. I think it's good when they promote their own culture and their own food and what they have done and contributed to society at large. Like Malbec is an example, worldwide wine. Why not celebrate it? You know, Pisco Sour in Peru, why not? So I think it's important for a country or a place to celebrate their heritage through food.
Yes, but America here, America, right, being America, the land I love most of the time, depending where we are, but America here just celebrating like just pecan sandies or we've had so many random National Panooch Day. I forget what a panooch even is these days. And I don't know why, but you know what? No matter what you celebrate out there, whether it's National Pisco Day, National Malbec Day, or National Pecan Sandy Day, I think we are here for you to celebrate whatever it is, especially during Pride Month. And moving right along to this day in gay history, did you know that in 1894, ladies, Alfred Kinsey, biologist and pioneer in the study of human sexuality, was born?
Did not know that. Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah.
Right. I put these tidbits in, and more and more and more as I do this, I feel the importance of keeping keeping our history not only alive, but at the forefront of our minds here, you know? And Alfred Kinsey being most notably known for the Kinsey Scale, right? One of the first of its kind. And for those of you youngins out there that don't know, the Kinsey Scale was a measure of sexuality from heterosexual to homosexual, 1 to 6, and where you fell on that scale, and was used worldwide for a long time till it's not anymore, because things are way more complicated than just a 1 to 6 scale. But, you know, he made a huge impact in his field, you know? And these days, I don't know if you know, at least here, there's been a movement to take sexuality out of pride and to make it more comfortable for heterosexual people. Have you heard about this?
No, but we've always had heterosexual ally friends with us at Pride celebrating. So to take the sexuality out of it, that's interesting. No,
and I always say Pride is inherently sexual because, right? Because it's about who we love in whatever form we're loving them, right? Yeah. And it's always been about being different. We were being different, and so we are discriminated against for being different because of who we love. So if you take the sexuality out of pride for the comfortability of others, it's almost like taking us backwards. I don't know if you'd agree or not with me. Thoughts?
I think it's about celebrating diversity, differences, and why not put out there what are those differences?
Including the sexual differences as well. Yeah. So it's.
I mean, like Jessie J once said, we are the colors of the rainbow, literally. So happy birthday to you, Alfred Kinsey, on this day in gay history. But I want to get to the getting on and really dive into the roots of Claire and Rosemary. If you didn't know, and you probably already do, because they are super popular out there on the interwebs. And I recently learned the term, thanks to Court Rada from the Food Network, the term celesbian, right? Because I was saying gay celebrities, but she was like, no, I'm a celesbian. And I was like, oh, yes, I accept. And I feel like you are celesbians, if I may call you that.
You may. Love it. We're going to adopt that one too.
Take it. I bestow it on you as it was bestowed on me. So, In Your Mouth listeners, Claire Rouget and Rosemary Kimani are the culinary explorers behind Authentic Food Quest, a food and travel website focused on local food experiences. In 2015, they traded in their corporate jobs to eat their way around the world. Through food, they believe people can connect deeper to a destination, culture, and people. As digital nomads, they travel the world slow, immersing themselves in the local culture through authentic food experiences. On their website, they share inspirational stories of local cuisine, culture, and recipes. Their goal is to help food lovers open up to the possibilities of connecting deeper to the people and places through local food. Yes, I mean, that was a mouthful, but I am here for all of it. I am here for the both of you. And I want to start at the very beginning. So, Rosemary, where did the love of food come from?
Great question. Actually, my journey with food has been progressive. I didn't grow up with a lot of good food, meaning that my mother was not a good cook.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Nairobi, Kenya.
Beautiful.
Yes. And so I didn't actually grow up cooking in the kitchen. The second reason is I had brothers. And I used to feel like the girls were told, go to the kitchen. I have a younger sister, and the boys could go play. So in a sense, I rejected cooking, and the food was never flavorful, in my opinion. When I moved to the U.S. is when my love for food started. I was exposed for the first time to cuisines from all around the world. You know, eating at Vietnamese restaurants, Thai restaurants, you know, and those were cuisines I had not experienced growing up. And so that opened me up to just new tastes, new flavors, and got me interested in food.
And Claire, your love of food, where did it begin?
You know, with my mom cooking at home, she was always cooking with fresh food. She was always shopping to a butcher, going to a farmer's market. So I grew up in France, and also on the weekend, it was big family reunions, and food was really at the center of meals, of getting together, of connecting. And even at, you know, in our small family at home, every day we would always get together when the meal, you know, was time for a meal. Even if my dad was late home, was always, wait, dad is not here. Gotta wait to set the table. So
I feel as in and two like juxtaposing stories here about what the kitchen means to you, in the sense of, but I feel like if you grow up in a culture that is like really rooted in that culture, that the kitchen really is a hub, a center that is beyond the food itself. Yes, it's centered around the food, but would you agree, Rosemary, that maybe, yes, you were being told to be in the kitchen because you were a girl, but there's also a cultural experience of coming together in that kitchen?
Yes, there was a coming together in that kitchen and eating at the dining room table. So for sure, there was that coming together. But I think it's, I mean, from my perspective, it's different now when I think about being with Claire's family. There's a different camaraderie. In my family, it was much more strict. It was, you know, the kids eat, you know, table manners, not a lot of convivial conversation, joking. That was my experience.
I get that, too. Like when my mother used to take us out to dinner or whatnot, or if there was like a wedding or something. And have you ever been to one of those weddings and those people that let their kids just run amok and the kids are running around and doing the things and sliding across the floor? Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. That, you will sit and you will act appropriately and you will eat your food because you're not going to embarrass me here. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I get it. And I love, Claire, that you mentioned like going to the butcher. I feel like the butcher is a lost art that I grew up like with my grandmother and my mother going to a butcher. They know a butcher, and that I would sometimes go to this butcher in my neighborhood. But during the pandemic and the meat shortage, I kind of rediscovered the butcher. And now that's the only place I get my meat.
Yes. You know, fresh meat. And I think it's an art that's kind of disappearing, because I don't think it's that easy to you know, be behind the counter and do the meat. And but it's such a, you know, celebration of good food. And in France, they do preparation. So you can get like almost a ready to serve meal, but it's really well made, homemade directly from most people.
Yeah, some of the butchers here in the city do something very, very similar. And there's a butcher near me that was a retail butcher for a while and then switched to wholesale, that they would only provide the meats to all the really expensive high-end restaurants. And then during the pandemic, they had to revert back after many, many, like I'm talking like many, many years of not being a retail butcher. And just being able to walk into the place now and being like, oh, and they have things prepared the way they would for these high-end restaurants that now you have access to, or I have access to, you know, is really, really special. And if you go at the right time and you know how to speak to them, they will guide you on what's really affordable, like what they're trying to move. And they're like, oh, well, this is on sale because we have too much of this, or we've prepared too much. So like this is on sale. And you can get really, amazing things. I don't know why I just became all obsessed with a butcher right now. But I did. You said butcher and you like warmed the cockles of my heart. Or maybe it's just that I love a man who knows how to handle his meat. This is what we do here on the pod. I'm full of terrible jokes, ladies. Don't mind me. So, okay. So you have this, you find your love for food here and back on track, you know, back down this yellow brick road. You find your love for food and you're trucking along and you have corporate jobs. Where is the point that you two, A, meet, B, fall in love, and then decide, you know what? Let's start a food journey and just quit our jobs. Three-part question. Somebody take it away.
Well, it started with food, of course,
and continues with food.
Yes. Okay. We met in Chicago, and I was going regularly to a monthly dinner with a lesbian group. And was a get-together, a way to connect with the community, to be with other lesbian women. And that particular dinner was raw food. So we are going out to a raw food restaurant.
And oh my God, remember that trend, raw
yes,
food?
Raw food,
and
yeah.
How people just got away serving you uncooked food?
Salads.
Oh my
salads,
God.
Salads, overpriced salads.
Oh yes. My God. Anyways, continue. I'm sorry.
So on my end, I had come out of a relationship and was looking to get to know the community. And so I had seen this posting with this lesbian group, and I was like, oh, well, why not? It's, you know, maybe I'll meet some people, but if nothing else, I'll try raw food for the first time. So that was my point of view going in.
I personally was not super excited about raw food, but the dinner was not super frequent. So I'm like, oh, if I miss this one, you know, it's too bad. I miss the opportunity to just meet new ladies. So that's what got me excited. The ladies first.
Yes. Yes. So you meet over delicious raw food. and you fall in love. Right?
I mean, we sat next to each other just by chance, and we could not, everyone else disappeared in the room. We were just centered on the both of us connecting, talking, you know, just feeling the chemistry. Yeah.
Got some lovely art cookies at the end. It was like, this is a sign.
I love that. In your mouth, listeners, I wish you could see this, and I probably could post it. I'm recording the video. But the way they tell this story, the way Claire and Rosemary tell this story with so much like love in their eyes and like checking in is actually really beautiful to see. And I kind of want to give you that visual because as they tell the story, it's almost like they're recounting the story to each other and not necessarily myself in a really, really beautiful way, which is, ladies, it's stunning to see. So you meet, we fall in love. All right. What year was this?
This is March 2008.
2008. All right. 2008. Okay. Yeah. In Chicago. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, is it all, now, can we just go down the stereotype? Is it like you meet raw food and then it's U-Hauls and flannel the next day or?
Oh, I think we're going to have to get real here. It took a minute.
Okay.
We got to know each other.
You know, breaking down barriers and demolishing stereotypes. I love it.
Yes.
Continue
yes.
it. Continue.
we dated, you know, regularly seeing each other. And then we traveled together, you know, again, getting to know each other in different scenarios. And then I believe my lease was coming up almost a year later then we moved
yes.
in. Yeah. Well, about almost yeah. a year later.
Okay.
And then after that, we moved in together.
Lovely. Lovely. How yeah. beautiful. How absolutely beautiful. So then, okay, now we're moving in together. But were you just like taking trips and to like fabulous places like Montenegro and then being like, this is great. And then decided, hey, we should do this for a living? Where did the light bulb turn on that you were going to be these fabulous food, like travel moguls here?
So the food part has always been with us wherever we go, as far as the way to discover a place. And not being from the US, both of us, also, you know, discovering the US, there was always the lenses around food, being in the US or traveling somewhere else. And during our journey, we actually went to France, work in France before going back to it. So we did a bit of a back and forth. And that's where I think we met some people who were expats in France, but didn't have the same experience around food and getting to connect with the culture, with the people, with some meals that are really typical. And we thought they were missing out. So we started to introduce them to that side of the culture. And I think in our professional journey, we were kind of, I would say for myself, kind of plateauing, seeing that, you know, we were still doing this 9-to-5 job type. I mean,
what were you both doing before this?
I was in engineering, so my background is in engineering, and I work in different industries. And at the time, I was actually working for a food equipment company.
Oh,
so
wow.
Working on equipment that professionals use in the kitchen. So I met a lot of chefs doing that, a lot of, you know, fun stories doing that. But I wanted to have, you know, more impact and give more meaning to what I was doing.
And at the time I was working in advertising, a different agencies, large agencies in Chicago and in Paris.
Aha, there it is. So you admit it. No.
I was ready for change. I was ready to do something.
You were
something.
Ready for change.
Yes.
And then you were like, well, I have all the know-how to make, why am I making other people money through advertising? We love traveling. We love food. I have the know-how. I have the engineering experience to make all of this happen. Yeah, all the puzzle pieces just went like bloop, 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 bloop.
Yeah. You can say so. But it was an act of faith. It was an act of courage. We were stepping outside. I mean, we had, you know, parents, especially Claire's family, you know, what are you doing? You're leaving such a stable career. You know, I had the same thing as well, too. Are you guys crazy? Is it just a sabbatical you're taking? Is it a midlife crisis? You know, what's going on? You know, so there was a lot that we had to, from a mental mindset point of view, is a lot we had to overcome.
My favorite, and you just titled your episode, and I love when my guests do this. It wasn't an act of faith. It was an act of courage. Oh, like, in your mouth, listeners, digest that for a moment. Like, take that in. It wasn't an act of faith. It was an act of courage. And how, like, how beautiful. Yes, absolutely. Speaking of acts not being an act of faith and an act of courage, or maybe an act of both, can you talk to me about coming out and what that was like for the both of you?
I think you should go first. I think you should.
We also don't qualify coming out stories here,
yeah.
You know, because I always say you can't qualify coming out stories as good or bad, because if you're something that's qualified bad as far as coming out in my eyes, when the person has reached the other side and is a beautiful human being and has found their family, then how, like, it could have started off not so great, but look as a result what happened. So there's no qualification here of coming out story. So either one can start, because all coming out stories, I mean, look where you are and look how beautiful you are now. So, like, it's part of the journey and it's important to hear.
Sure. And as you mentioned, it's for me, it's really been a journey. I came out late, and that's first is really coming out to oneself. And I grew up really around, you know, around guys. I I knew right away I didn't want to be conform to society, you know, being the good girl who plays with the girls. No, I was playing with boys because I was surrounded by my brother's friends. They were older and there was no girls of my age. So I did most of what boys do when they are young, and I loved it. And as I grew up, I also went into a field. I was an engineer, and I actually graduated doing mechanical engineering. Again, a field where was mostly male around me. And it was fun. I love being with guys, but I never really fell in love. I was like attracted, dated guys. But it was just a fun thing to do. You have to do, you know, when you're young adults.
Yeah.
And I didn't fall for, oh, I need to have kids. Like, this is never part of my interest. So it's only later on when it was out of the university, out of being in the dorms with all friends, and then feeling lonely at home, starting to question, what do I really want? You know, starting to be heavy, to be lonely, and what kind of relationship do I want? And that's how I started to second guess the idea to be with guys, because I didn't have so much attraction to guys. At the time, I was in France, and in Paris, things were very open. Where I was a little less, it was hard to find resources to be exposed to that. And shortly after, I moved to the US, and because I was in Chicago, it's a large city, then I reached out to LGBT community, found resources, met with a lesbian group, and that's where I felt, you know, that's where I came to myself, and I knew this is the right thing for me.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And similarly, when I came out fully in university myself, or in college, when I got back to New York, I had no friends, right? Because anybody in high school and people had moved away, and we had moved into a new home and whatnot. And I went to the LGBTQ center here in Manhattan, not only to find a doctor that specialized in LGBTQ health, but also there were groups that I was part of where I made friends that I still have friends to from this day. So it's a good point that you make as well, that you need to support, or we need to support, our local LGBTQ centers, because even if we're not using them, the resources they provide for the community, for our young people especially, right, and our seniors, is phenomenal and tremendous. And shout out to the LGBTQ centers all over the world doing the work for the people. Now, do you want to jump in
here? Yeah, I can jump in here, and I have to. I do. I will jump in, but I have to really say something about the support as well too, and having also other people and other role models. So I grew up in Kenya and in Nairobi, as I mentioned earlier, and it's not a very open society, and I certainly grew up in a very closed home. So there was no deviation. I mean, so I had boyfriends, but there was nothing there. And so when I finally got a chance to go to school in the US, I remember my first semester, one of the friends that I met, and we're still good friends today, he was gay. And when I met him and we were sitting in class and we were talking and I got to know him, he's just such a regular guy. He took me to his home. I had dinner with his family, loving family. And that's when I started to really think about me and what I want and who really I am. And then when I saw how he is, you know, he's one of my best friends today, how he's well-adjusted, his family loved him, I realized that I can do that for myself. I can create the life that I want. So in my case, I had to, in a way, cut ties. And I think it was mutual on both ends. I ended up telling my parents, after I finished undergrad, then I went to graduate school. And then it was only after, when I started my first job, that I found a community, much like Claire mentioned. This was in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And very much, I didn't know anyone. It was my first job, new city, and I needed support. And I decided at that time, I'm going to face this being gay thing. Am I gay? Am I not? My parents, I knew that it was not going to work, but I needed that support. So through that center, I found support. I ended up meeting my first girlfriend at the time. And it was, so because of that, I told my parents officially, and it did not go down well. My mother was a member of the church. I don't know that she still is. And so she would send me recordings of singing and the choir singing because America has, condemned me or changed me. And,
yeah, we used to have, my mother and I, we used to have prayer sessions. And my mother loves me very much. I love her too. We have a great relationship. But we used to have prayer sessions in the car when she would drive me to college that I would find a girlfriend.
Wow.
So, yeah. I can relate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as a result in my case, I chose me and I chose my happiness. And I am not, so we don't have a relationship with my parents. I don't want their life. I don't want their life for me. I want my life. So that's what I've chosen. So
choosing you. I love that. Yeah. Yeah. You're like literally giving me all the things today. I literally chose me. And sometimes you need to. And sometimes that's the most important lesson to learn. I think you both would agree, as people of a certain age here, that, choosing you may be the most important decision you make in your lifetime.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I remember my mom's sister is in the U.S. She's based in the U.S. as well. And she asked me one question that fundamentally changed my life. She said, are you preparing yourself for life in the U.S. or life in Kenya? And when I answered the question, life in the U.S., that was also tied to that whole idea of then you live with the choice you have made. Because you know you're not going to go back because you're not going to go back and conform to life in Kenya. So that, again, was also very helpful. But it came to making that one decision.
Yeah. Maybe an act of faith and courage in oneself.
Yes.
Right?
Yes,
To bring it full circle. You see what I did there?
Yes. We're tracking.
Oh my goodness, ladies. Thank you so much for sharing that with us and the audience. As I always say, and I won't stop saying it, each of our stories are important because we never know who's listening, especially now that I feel like there's an influx of listeners because of me being humbled and honored by being on Apple's Pride playlist this month. And we never know who's listening and we never know who our stories can impact and affect. So thank you for sharing because it is important, not only during Pride Month, but every day of the year. I want to take my own act of faith and courage and choose the podcast right now for a minute and take these beautiful ladies to my favorite part and your favorite part of the podcast, a little something we like to call...
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Food news updates. Food news.
Ooh, honey,
you ain't ready,
girl.
Spill the tea.
News updates.
A bakery lost a client when it made Rainbow Pride cookies, so others bought every item in the bake shop. This is a story that's been hitting the news cycle, and it's a story of community and coming together and you know what? Overcoming hate. And thank you to the Washington Post for this little article here. But when a small Southern bakery made rainbow-themed cookies to celebrate Pride Month, there was a swift backlash. Confections, a tiny store in Lufkin, Texas, shared a photo on its Facebook page of heart-shaped rainbow sugar cookies with the caption, "More love, less hate. Happy Pride to all of our LGBTQ friends. All lovers of cookies and happiness are welcome here." Within the hour, the small business near the eastern edge of Texas lost dozens of followers on social media, and not long after, a peeved patron canceled an order she had placed for 5 dozen cookies. Now, ladies, these are those like cookies, those sugar cookies that are really intricate, that take hours to make, which I don't understand who has the patience to make them, A, and why. But like, shout out to you if you're doing that out there, because it's an art for sure. But they had just made all these summer themed cookies for this person who saw their rainbow cookies, and then they were like, nope, no thanks. The bakery is run by 3 people, all family, tiny. They were struggling because of the pandemic. So like, even losing that order hit them hard. And so they put out another statement saying, oh, we never thought that something like this would happen over a message of love. If anybody's around and needs cookies, we're going to have an overstock of them, because now people are canceling their orders. The next day they arrived to the shop with a line well around the block waiting to buy cookies from their shop. So much so, the phone kept ringing that they had to take it off the hook because they couldn't keep up with the line and the phone at the same time. Yeah. People were buying cookies for people behind them. People were buying cookies for kids in the street. People were trying to give them money, just to give them money, to which they told them to donate to LGBTQ-themed organizations or animal rescue services.
Wow, that is love wins. Love wins all the time. Always.
And in small town America, town Texas.
Wow, that's inspirational. I think we're maybe turning that corner that we need to turn in this country, in the U.S. Absolutely.
She goes on to say, the line brought me to tears. All those people standing in the rain, waiting so patiently to buy a cookie. We just wanted to be inclusive, and it was heartwarming to see how many people felt the same.
Wow. That really does bring tears to my eyes. That is love.
So
inclusivity.
There's a man by the name of Jay Eagle, who is a regular customer who owns a computer repair shop across the street, and said that he was awed by the spirited crowd that congregated outside the bakery. He goes, it was really neat to see people coming together like that. While the initial backlash didn't surprise me, it was great to see how much more it is the other way now.
Yes. Exciting. Wow. That's incredible.
These are the stories we need to hear, especially during the month, right?
Exactly. And like you said, and every day of the year, too.
And every day of the year.
Yes.
I mean, absolutely. I think we are both here for this. And you know what? I am sure Confections Bakery in Lufkin, Texas, are still taking your orders or still supporting the community. Go out there and support them. Google them. I think they are, their Instagram handle is at Sugar Cookie Art or Sugar Art Cookie. I forget off the top of my head right now. But please go send them all the love, or just send them a love note, right? Because I think you would agree that we are here for this.
Yes.
Legal beef boiling in New York City court over Boar's Head Deli Meat's fortune. Ladies, have you heard about this? This is probably one of the most iconic food news stories, I think, to date on this episode. Do you know about Boar's Head Meat?
We love Boar's Head Meat, yes.
Okay, not a sponsor, but we'll gladly take all your sponsorship money once you figure out this legal battle. So apparently, there is, thank you to the Daily News, a salty beef is sizzling among the heirs to the Boar's Head fortune. Okay, so The death of Barbara Brunkhorst, the daughter of Boar's Head founder Frank Brunkhorst, has sparked a court fight amongst the two families who control the deli meats company, estimated to earn around $1 billion annually. One side disputes, right, is the grandson of the Boar's Head founder and Barbara's nephew. And the other side is Eric Bischoff, grandson of Bruno Bischoff, who was Frank Brunkhorst's brother-in-law. Basically, at its basis, the woman died. She allegedly wanted the money to go to neurological research X, Y, and Z. And now the other side is like, well, no, that's my money. You can't take that. And it's over this iconic deli meat here in New York City with so much like family television drama that I feel like it needs to be made into like a 6-part like Netflix series.
Right. My God, that's crazy. Yeah, it's funny what money will do to families and how it will split them apart. Oh my God.
And did you know, I found this a really interesting factoid. The elder Brunkhorst and the elder Bischoff started the business in 1905 selling hams and other meats from a horse-drawn wagon in Brooklyn. And the fortune has been split between, or the business has been split between the two families ever since.
Interesting. Yeah, wow. It'll be interesting to see how it's resolved.
Right?
Yeah.
I just thought this was like fabulous. I mean, talk about the gay drama of it all, even though they're probably not gay, right? I'm not outing anybody on the pod here.
Oh my God, you're right about a series here. Yeah, we need to see chapter by chapter.
Chapter by chapter, like hiding piles of money and like hollowed out hams, you know? Can't you see like transporting just like truckloads of like hollowed out hams with all these like monies, like just transporting it, being like, don't worry, he'll never know. I bet, allegedly here, that someone is just squirreling away money in, like, you know, deli meats and something. So that way, at least, if this goes the other way, they'll still have money in the bank.
Right. Yeah, but it's incredible. They started from horse wagons, selling in horse wagons.
Wow. Selling meat, going back to the butcher of it all. Selling meat. We're just keep coming like that. We're going with the carousel of this podcast, but I mean, selling meat off the back of a wagon, you know?
Yeah, $1 billion business, wow.
Could you imagine buying meat out of the back of a trunk today?
Not sure in the US, but we can see that around the world, yeah, some places.
maybe. I don't know. I hope these families get it together, though.
No kidding. And
figure it out, because love is love, and money isn't everything, even though if they have some extra money just for some sponsorship dollars, I will take it. And last but not least, ladies, Peanut Butter and Company celebrates Pride Month with food bank donations to celebrate LGBTQ communities. The Peanut Butter and Company, the family-owned business peanut butter brand, available at more than 15,000 stores nationwide, announces a new effort to support food insecure LGBTQ communities across the country by donating 1 million spoonfuls of peanut butter to food banks.
Good, I think good initiative, but maybe healthy food would be maybe preferred.
I like peanut butter.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Now, is peanut butter unhealthy?
I don't know what else goes in it, okay? And I don't know. Besides the crushed peanuts, I'm not sure what else goes to make it, to conserve it.
I think, depending on what brand here, mm-hmm. right? If we're going to dive deep into the health factors of peanut butter, I think, much like anything, you can get the bad and the good kind. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because there's like the peanut butter with a ton of sugar added mm-hmm. and other crap added to it. And then the natural peanut butter that's just peanuts, maybe a little salt and water or whatever else goes into peanut butter, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or oil.
Peanuts, yeah.
right? Some crushed peanuts. Because I learned a long time ago that you can't call it peanut butter unless there's like a high amount of peanuts in it. Like the peanut, the National Peanut Board will not let you call it peanut butter unless it's like 90% peanuts or something, you know, that's peanut heavy. something like that. But I always talk about the statistics of LGBTQ homeless youth in America because a large percentage of homeless youth in America are LGBTQ, of the LGBTQ nature, sometimes up to 40%.
Wow. Did not realize it was that high.
At least here in America, because much like these coming out stories where families disown people, they're kicked out or they're kicked out of their foster care or onto the street, or they just leave because they feel like they're unsafe. And so they end up in the shelter system.
I mean, it's amazing what they're doing in terms of providing some support then, you know, from that point of view, you know, as a peanut butter fan.
Yes, because I think it's a nutritive food. So
yeah, I love, love peanut butter. I love, love peanut butter. And I am here for peanut butter doing the work. You know what? More often than not, a lot of these companies don't put the peanut butter where their mouth is, you know, the money where their mouth is, in the sense of they'll throw a rainbow on it, but what are they doing in the background, you know? And as opposed, what I love about this is that Peanut Butter and Company isn't throwing rainbows on all their peanut butter jars. They're like, F that. What we're going to do for Pride Month is donate food to necessary food banks that house LGBTQ people that are LGBTQ centric, you know?
Right, right.
Because this will have more of an impact than throwing a rainbow on our on our canister.
Yeah, completely agree. Completely agree. And it's, yeah, like you said, they're putting their money where their mouth is. So it's great.
So
it's great.
I think we are here for this. And I think that's a very inspiring way to end Food News Update. How was that for you? Are you going to go through the streets of Montenegro now telling everybody that there's a big meat war here happening in America?
With peanuts as well.
Yes.
We have a fair share here of the small time is a prosciutto is style of Montenegro is.
I wish you could mail some to me. I love, I love. Best food destination in your eyes.
Wow, that's a tough one. That's a tough one.
I mean, you've been everywhere. In Your Mouth, listeners, if you go to AuthenticFoodQuest.com, there is a food guide for everywhere you can imagine almost. Like, you just can click through. And now that we're back to traveling, it's a great resource if you're just traveling someplace and need, like, food recommendations or, like, and they really, really dive deep into the cultural aspects, you know. It's just not like tourist food or popular tourist restaurants here. So, you know what? Top three. How about top three?
Okay. Right. I'll go with Greece. I'll start in Greece. The island of Crete. Fresh flavors, amazing products. You amazing artisans as well, too. I mean, when you eat the food, you taste the actual, if it's tomatoes, if it's zucchini, if it's eggplants. I mean, you taste the food. That is like good, solid, good food, good products, good people. Some of the best.
Number two.
And healthy. Yeah.
Yes.
I love Vietnamese food. In Vietnam, it's a lot of street food. But what I love is those ladies that have like their little street carts, and they serve only one bowl, one meal. So when you show up there, you served almost right away. And it's a diversity of flavors. It's combination. They do sweet, sour, salty, fish sauces, really heavy. And also the texture. A lot of work around the rice and herbs as well. So it's very interesting combination of flavors. Very tasty, very delicate as well.
And let's have number three. What has been the jointly the place that you both keep going back to?
think we'd have to say Argentina on this one. Argentina. I mean, well,
there was full agreement across the board. So.
I mean, it is the, I mean, from the meat,
the wine,
the Malbec wine we were talking about, as well as their other wines, the quality of the produce as well.
And diversity, you know, they are from the Andes to Ushuaia. So you have your seafood, you have your meat, you have your grains, everything.
I mean, it's one of the countries where we saw native potatoes, native grains, and I mean, the diversity. We ate llama meat there for the first time in the north of Argentina. I mean, it's the food from there to Buenos Aires, where it's very heavily Italian influenced. You know, it's just very different and very interesting.
Llama meat. I'll try it. Why not? What was the two-part question here? The most exotic thing you've eaten in your travels, and then the thing that you like were like, I never want to eat that again.
I think the most exotic has been a guinea pig.
Okay.
And that's from Peru. It's called cuy, C-U-Y, and it's a traditional specialty. It is not something we were looking forward to eating. But because we talk about local food and we have to write about it from an authentic point of view, we had to have it. It's like rabbit. It's not a lot of meat, very bony. You know, it was good to have it one time, and it was exotic. And I think that's good. And then the thing we would not have,
in the Philippines. There is street food that's quite popular. It's a snack. It's called balut.
Oh, and yeah, balut. I've had balut.
Yes. Oh, yeah?
Yes. So tell the kids what balut is, please.
So it is a baby.
It's a baby. It's a baby duck. It's a duck egg.
It's a duck egg.
Duck embryo.
Yes.
And yes, you eat it out of, any of my listeners, they just like crack the top of the egg open and then there's like this liquid and you like drink the liquid and then like you eat like a tiny formed like duck embryo. Yeah, yeah, there's a restaurant here in the city. I've had it.
Well, okay. Do you like it?
It was an experience,
yes.
I will say. Shout out to my Filipinos out there. Shout out to all the Filipinos, right?
Ooh. Yeah.
I mean, just, you know, cultures and experiences are just so, so interesting. And it's just like, where did it even come from? You know, like, but then again, it's just like, well, also, who decided, let me like cut this pig up and throw this thing on the fire and call it bacon, right? And now it's delicious, right. You know, like, it's just like discovering that and discovering where these things come from has to be so, so special to you both.
Yeah, I mean, it's what we really love about discovering the food. It's the stories behind the food and how they're created. And many of them are mistakes. If we think about a lot of desserts, especially in Portugal, is what comes to mind. You know, someone left the oven going and then it formed into something that was never originally intended. And then now it's a specialty. It's fascinating. You know, some of those, you know, are created by nuns. You know, the stories of the food are, I think, for me, one of the best parts about Authentic Food Quest. I mean, of course, the eating is something else. Yes.
Food history in itself is just an interesting and crazy topic. A long time ago, pre-pandemic, I did a panel. I moderated a panel on the Intrepid here in New York City, the warship, and it was all about cakes in the Navy, right? And how these big ships, to keep the morale up, would figure out how to make these massive cakes. But remember, you're on a ship. Supplies are limited. So if you run out of eggs feeding thousands of sailors, how are you going to make a cake? Right. And then that turned into the impact that the military, the U.S. military, had on the way Americans eat, like a lot of the frozen foods in America come because of, they were designed to be military, all the prepackaged things were designed for wartime and to like feed the military. And then these companies were like, oh, well, if we could do this for them, why aren't we feeding all of this to the American public? You know, like just right. All of that is like simply fascinating. And you can, I'm sure food historians exist, but like you literally can just spend a lifetime doing this.
And then tracing the flavors.
And the origins,
origins and how they end up, they start here and they end up somewhere else.
Like how Americans brought from Persia the peppers to India and how curry came over and from India to Thailand and like all like the trade routes and this and that.
It's exactly.
Insane. So I'm very envious at just about your journeys and what you do and how you do it. And it's quite spectacular and quite incredible to see. Now that we're traveling again and traveling kind of what I'm going to call locally more, right? Like traveling locally, I have obviously a large part of the audience here is American. And then second, sometimes they battle each other from India. Shout out to you, India. Hey, where would you suggest how would we start to explore again?
That's a great question. I mean, like, there is a lot.
You know, it's like starting like the engine to a car again. Like the world is starting up again. Like, how do we start to explore again coming through this?
I mean, I think you start in your own backyard. You don't have to go far. You don't even have to get in your car. You know, just about a year, right before the pandemic, we actually took a tour of Chinatown, Chicago. Now, Claire and I have lived in Chicago for years, but we had never taken that tour or spent enough time in Chinatown. So, you know, a metro stop away, and we were transported to a fascinating place, and we learned about Chinese contributions to American food. So we didn't even have to go far. We ate at restaurants within the Chinatown tour experience that took us all the way to, you know, Sichuan in China. So I think you can first very much just start where you are. And support your local community right there.
Amen.
Then you can go on across the state.
Amen. Amen. Ladies, it is Pride Month. And before we close out, because this has been really incredible, and I just want to keep talking and talking and talking, and you have to come back. since it is Pride Month, I always ask everybody, what does Pride mean to you? Feel free, either one of you, take it and take it away.
For me, I think pride means, you know, to be true to yourself and to be out there and be at ease being yourself and showing who you are to the world.
And I would agree. It's about be you, bring you out to the world, you know, be you and express yourself, share yourself. Because you never know who you'll come in touch with and what minds you'll change. Just be you and be proud.
Amen. I love it. Yeah. I love it. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been a delight, a pleasure. You legit have just made my day. I am so, the cockles of my heart are very warm with meeting you, and you are, and I am proud to say that you are now part of my big gay foodie village, and I am happy to have you here. So thank you.
Thank you for inviting us here. Thank you for the work that you're doing and sharing these stories. I think that's really important, and we've had a blast.
Oh my God, yes, this is not the end of us. Let the children know, ladies. Let them know where they can find you. Give them all the details, please.
So you can find us on Authentic Food Quest. That's our website, authenticfoodquest.com. Instagram at Authentic Food Quest. Twitter at Authentic Food Quest. But more importantly, check out our videos on YouTube at Authentic Food Quest.
Got it. You heard all that? Authentic Food Quest. Google is your friend, y'all. As we're saying goodbye, you know what? Slide over, go to Instagram, hit the follow button, and you know what? Slide into my DMs. Tell me what Pride means to you. Tell me your coming out stories. I love to hear them all. I love to be supportive. You know, say hi. Let's celebrate Pride together, because Pride means community to me. right? If you're going out this weekend in New York City or any other place that is celebrating Pride this week, please stay vigilant, stay safe, have a blast, take care of each other, because we are a community. Together, we must take care of each other. Look out for each other out there. Be safe, please, right? If you're drinking a ton, one for one. I got to be mom right now. I got to be mom. And maybe I need to take my own advice sometimes too. If you're drinking, one drink, one water, right? Have a blast. Be safe. Get your vaccine. Hopefully you all have your vaccine already out there. Thank you once again to Claire and Rosemary for Authentic Food Quest. What a special day, especially during this Pride Week. And as always, thank you for listening to In Yo